brahmana, and so on, and also the four different ashrams. If the members of the four varnas and four ashrams do not worship Lord Sri Hari, who is himself directly the origin of their own creation, they will simply fall down. Among these classes, women and Shudras, who generally have no contact with the hearing and chanting of Hari Katha, are, on account of their very ignorance, special candidates for the mercy of great souls. The members of the other three varnas becoming fit for achieving the lotus feet of Hari by second birth through Vedic initiation, Shota Janma, nevertheless become confused by concocted interpretation of the Vedas, presuming themselves to be great scholars, although not understanding the essential meaning of karma, they become flatterers of other deities in their greed for fruit of results and ridicule the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are fixed in family life, attached to mundane gossip, and indifferent to the devotional service of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. They are maddened by material opulence and pleasures, devoid of real discrimination and intelligence, and always function on the mental platform. But such attachment to family life and so on is most natural for the mass of people, even though it is against the best advice of Shastra. To become disentangled from such life in all respects is the principal teaching of the Vedas. Real wealth is that conducive to the faithful execution of the duty of the soul, not that which exists simply for selfish sense gratification. As a consequence of the desire to indulge the senses, men and women couple together to produce children. Engaging in animal slaughter, apart from that necessary for performance of sacrifice, these human animals themselves suffer violence in the next life. If because of excessive greed for one's own pleasure, one commits violence against living beings, he's also attacking Lord Sri Hari, who is present in the body of all living entities as a supersoul. Opposed to Lord Vasudev, ignorant self-cheaters completely carry out their own ruination and enter into hell. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, accepts in each of the different yugas various colors, names, and forms, and is worshipped by various prescribed processes. In Satya Yuga, the Supreme Lord is white in complexion, has four arms, dresses as a brahmachari, is known by such names as Hamsa, and is served by the practice of meditational yoga. In Treta Yuga, he is red in color and four-armed, is the personification of sacrifice, is characterized by the symbols of the sacrificial spoon, ladle, etc., is called by such name as Jagya, and is worshipped by Vedic sacrifices. In Dwarka Yuga, he is of dark blue complexion, wears a yellow garment, is marked by Srivats and other signs, has such names as Vasudev, and is worshipped in his deity form by the regulations of the Vedas and Tantras. In Kali Yuga, he is golden in color, is accompanied by associates who are his plenary and secondary limbs and his weapons, is absorbed in Krishna Kirtan, and is worshipped by the performance of Sankirtan Jagya. Since in Kali Yuga, all the goals of human life can be achieved simply by glorification of the holy name of Lord Sri Hari, those who can appreciate the real essence of things praise Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, many people in South India, Dravida Desh, and places where the Tamraparni, Kritamala, Kaveri, and Mahanadi rivers flow will be dedicated to the service of the Supreme Lord. Persons who give up all false ego and take shelter of Lord Hari are no longer debtors to the demigods or anyone else. The personality of Godhead Sri Hari appears in the hearts of devotees who know no other shelter than him, and causelessly drives away all evil desires from the devotees' hearts. Videharaj Nimi, having heard elaborate descriptions of Bhagavad Dharma from the mouths of the Navayogendras, offered worship to them with a satisfied mind. Then they disappeared. Devarshi Narada thereupon instructed Vasudeva about the ultimate shelter of devotional service. He told Vasudeva that although Lord Krishna has become his son, having appeared in this world to free the earth of its burden, he should not think of Lord Krishna as his child, but rather as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even by meditating upon Krishna in a spirit of enmity, such kings as Shishupal attained an equal status to him. So to say nothing, to attempt to say anything more about the perfect achievement of great souls such as Vasudeva, who enjoy intimate loving relations with Krishna, would be a useless endeavor. Sri Raja Bhacha Bhagavantam Harim Prayo Nabhajantyatma Vittama Tesham Ashanta Karmanam Kanishta Vichitatmanam Sri Raja Vacha Bhagavantam Harim Prayo Nabhajantyatma Vitatma Tesham Ashanta Kamanam Kanishta Vichitatmanam Sri Raja Vacha Bhagavantam Arim Prayo Nabhajantyatma Vitamaha. Tesham Ashanta Kamanam Pranishta Vichitatmanam. Please chant. Viraja Uvacha. Raja Vacha Atam Harim Kaya Vittana Isama Santa Kamana Kanishta Vichitatmana Siraja Uvacha Bhagavantam Harim Prayo Kantam Vidvittamaha Sesham Ashanta Kamana Kanishta Vichitatmana Vaishnavis Viraja Uvacha Bhagavantam Harim Prayo Kantam Vidhi Kama Shanta Kama Uvacha King Nini inquired. Bhagavatam,
Bhagavatam,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Arim,
Ari,
Praya,
for the most part.
Na,
never.
Bhajanti,
who
worship.
Atma
Vitama,
Atma,
all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self.
All of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of
the self.
Tesham,
of them.
Ashanta,
unquenched.
Kamana,
material desires.
Ka,
what?
Nishta,
destination.
Abhichita,
who are not able to control. Atmanam, themselves. Translation and purport by followers of His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada. King Nini further inquired, my dear Yugendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires and who are not in control of their own selves. In the fifth chapter of the 11th canto, Chamash Rishi describes the inauspicious path of those who are unfavorable to the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. And the sage Karna Bhajana explains the Yuga Dharma avatars, the incarnations of the Lord who present the authorized process of religion for each different age. In the previous chapter, it was explained that although the demigods place obstacles in the path of the Lord's devotees, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the devotees are able to place their feet on the head of such obstacles and thus pass beyond them to the supreme destination. However, for the non-devotees, there's no such facility. As soon as the conditioned soul becomes indifferent to the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, he's immediately attracted by the temporary varieties of matter and becomes a slave of inauspicious desires. Thus, the conditioned soul, devoid of devotion for the Lord, completely forgets the transcendental bliss of the spiritual world, which is enjoyed in five transcendental rasas. Although the devotees are not overcome by the sense gratification offered by the demigods themselves become absorbed in material form, taste, and smell. And similarly, those who are non-devotees also become bound by material form, taste, and other sense perceptions, such as the sensuous experience of sex life. Thus, they remain hovering in a dreamlike state, imagining different types of material sense gratification, and forget their eternal relationship with the Personality of Godhead. Videharaj Nimi now inquires from Chamas Muni about the goal attained by such bewildered persons. Sri Raja Vacha, Bhagavan Tam Harim Prayo Na Bhajantyatma Vitamaha Tesham Ashanta Kamanam Ka Nishta Vichitatmanam. King Nimi further inquired, my dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires and who are not in control of their own selves. In the 22nd chapter of Madhyalila, Lord Chaitanya instructs Sanatana Goswami about the three purposes of the Vedas. The first being Sambandha, Gyan, and then which is knowledge of one's relationship with Krishna, and also the relationship with Krishna and the material energy, and the relationship with the jiva and the material energy. And then there's Abhideya, how to act on the basis of this understanding of one's relationship with Krishna and the material energy. And then there's Prayojana, which is the ultimate goal of life. Prema Pumarto Mahan. This is the ultimate necessity to develop love for Krishna. This is Lord Chaitanya's position on Prayojana. And Prayojana actually means necessities. So this is a great necessity. And then in Lord Chaitanya's presents to Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi, where he's delivering all the residents of Varanasi, he describes that the essence of Bhagavatam, and then he goes and cites these three, our relationship with the Supreme Lord, our activities in that connection, and the goal of life. They're manifest in the Chaturshloki. So these are very important, and we can analyze, well, is this Sambandha again? Is this Abhideya again? Is this Prayojana again? We can look and see every part of Shastra, every presentation in Shastra will fit into those categories. And the Acharya sometimes will put efforts into analyzing, well, what is this? So for a devotee, the goal of life is to develop love for Krishna. It's important to have this goal. It's just like in the management realm, if we do strategic planning, we set goals and then we work to achieve them. So by reading the Krishna book, by reading the 10th canto, we understand the nature, the mindset of the Nichasiddha devotees, the residents of Vrindavan, so we can start, wow, this is really how I'm supposed to act in my relationship with Krishna. So it helps us with our abhideya, with our process. Of course, the process is that Prabhupada has given us is anyabhilashita sunyam, jnana karma dinavitam, anukul yena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. So this is a description of abhideya and what pure devotional service is all about. So when one is actually engaged in pure devotional service, he must be devoid of material desires, knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy, and fruit of action. He must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. So we may not have that luxury of being free from material desires. Probably not too many of us in this room can raise their hand to say, are you free from material desires? Probably not too many can do that. But yet, there's a special dispensation that's given. It's described in the 11th, later on in the 11th canto, in the 20th chapter, text in the purport to 27 and 28. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the mindset of someone who still is affected by material desires and how he should deal with that, and still. He still enables that one can still practice pure devotional service even though there is still these residual desires. The point is that one just doesn't act on them. One just continually pushes to try and please Krishna and recognizing, I can't myself take away these material desires. Only Krishna, you can only do this. So then the whole process of surrendering to Krishna, crying to his holy name and begging for his mercy, hoping that someday things will settle down in here and I won't be affected anymore by these desires, but at least I don't react to them. I don't follow their promptings. This is, and so one can actually function on that pure devotional platform. So here's the big question. Okay, so if the goal of life is prayojana, and this is one of the divisions, that's one of the categories of jnana that's presented in Bhagavatam, then what is going on here with this chapter? We're talking about, so what is the destination? What's the goal? What happens to people that they're against Krishna? They're devoid of bhakti. In other words, non-devotees. Why are we talking about this? I mean, why is King Nimi asking this question? And why is it being entertained? You know, of course, Narada Muni's, you know, he's relaying this whole history. What's that got to do with a devotee that's trying to advance in Krishna consciousness? It's a big question. Seems like this is not prayojana. This is just the opposite of prayojana. So there's this description. Now, there are precedents in the Bhagavatam where this is done. Also in Gita, you go to the 16th chapter, there's a whole description. Ishvaraham aham bogi siddham balavan suki. I'm the controller, the enjoyer. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. This is the mindset of the demoniac personality. And then there's a whole description of how he attains repeated birth among species of demoniac life, and they gradually sink down to the most abominable type of existence. So there's a description of the destination of the asura there, but then also at the end of the fifth canto, the last chapter, there's 23 different hells described. You know, that if you don't walk the straight and narrow, that's where you go. So it is part of the Bhakti Shastra to describe these destinations. But how is that helpful to us? Anybody have any ideas? Madame Mohan Prabhu? Okay, so you've given the class. Are there any questions? No, I'm okay. Those are good points. So the first one that you made is that's not working, is it? Okay. So the first one is that shows us the nature of the material energy, and that prompts us to not go there, right? I mean, it's a real razor's edge. Prabhupada describes bhakti in that way. There's a razor's edge. If you're careless, then Maya can get you. There's different descriptions of how when Prabhupada would go out on a preaching engagement, servants would hear him praying to Krishna, "My dear Lord Krishna, please protect me from Maya." So this is the kind of caution that even an Uttama Vaishnava demonstrates because of the power of the material energy. So that's one way that You know, this can be very instructive and helpful to us. Just like, now earlier on, now we're hearing from these four chapters, we're hearing from the sons, nine of the sons of Rishabdev. But in the fifth canto, Rishabdev, he instructs his sons in a similar way. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yadindriya pritya apnoti. Na sarumanye yata atmanoyam asana piklesheta asadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activities. He doesn't know that due to his past misdeeds, he's already received this material body. And actually, he shouldn't have, you know, so an intelligent person, he doesn't engage in sense gratification again because he knows that this will produce repeated birth and death and incredible amount of distress. He doesn't go there. He doesn't become an atmahana, a killer of the soul. I mean, the soul can get so covered. We don't even, I mean, I was having a discussion with a devotee a couple of days ago, and one of their siblings, very intelligent person, but complete atheist. So, I mean, this is what happens. You just completely forget that you've got this relationship with Krishna. You completely, just think about it. You don't have access to this Ladini Shakti, this bliss of Krishna consciousness. And we were hearing a story about one devotee who was a prominent leader in our movement in the early days. And a devotee met him after many, many years at a reunion in L.A. And this devotee had become a Buddhist. And it's just so impersonal. There's no, I'm sure he wasn't getting any taste. He just heard all about Buddhism from Ramapad Swami. So that's what we're up against. If we're not careful, then we can lose this priceless gem that Srila Prabhupada has given us of Krishna consciousness. So there's also, as we go into this chapter, there's descriptions of Vanashram. Usually we think, well, okay, Daivi Vanashram, let's follow it. But sometimes there's a tendency to not practice Daivi Vanashram, but just to practice Vanashram and forget about worshiping the Lord. In the third verse of this chapter, that one who engages in Vanashram, he may be doing it just real spot on, but if he forgets to worship Krishna, what happens? Goes to hell. So that's the tendency, you know, and of course, Vanashram is there to gradually help people come up to, from maybe ignorance to passion to goodness, satvam sanjayate gyanam. So in goodness, one can actually start processing transcendental knowledge effectively and start making real progress in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada, in different places, particularly in the first canto, would liken functioning in the mode of goodness to being a devotee. So at least that has to be there. But when one gets into, there's risks with Vanashram. It's not all that it's cut out to be. If one isn't strict, and yat karoshi yad ashnasi yaj jahosi dadasi yat pashashi kante yat tat karushva maradapanam. He doesn't offer everything to Krishna, all that he does, all that he eats, all that he offers and gives away. It should be an offering to Krishna. If he doesn't do that, then there's not that power that bhakti gives to free us from the modes. And the nature of the modes is that it keeps pushing you down. Look at Kali Yuga. Look at how crazy everything is around. It's just the modes, just it's a downward spiral. So Udarad Atmanatmanam, Natmanam Abhasha Dayat, Atmaiva Yatmano Bandur, Atmaiva Ripur Atmana. So one should elevate himself and not degrade himself. The mind can be the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So that's what we are dealing with. We have to be really conscious that Maya, yeah, as Madan says, kind of chasing us. And it's true. And if we're not careful, she'll grab us. And we've seen this. It's not that we, you know, the track record of devotees within our movement, it's not that everyone stays in. As a matter of fact, you know, I reflect on those that I took Diksha with in 1978, and there's only three that are still active out of, I think, 19. And I think most of you are very senior, and you can reflect back on, well, what happened to so-and-so, and what happened to him and that? You know, so Maya is very powerful. So this is one of the lessons that we can learn from this first part of this chapter, is the power of Maya and how careful we have to be, because it just we can get covered in such a powerful way that we just completely forget our relationship with Krishna and lose all that we've been working hard to achieve for so many years. So that's also, you know, this whole point about Vanashram in the second chapter, or the first, in the first chapter, the second verse, Dharma Projita Kaitavo. You know, so this, the Bhagavatam kicks out cheating religions. So if Krishna's not in the center, he's not Daivi Vanashram, then you're going to be disappointed with the results. Therefore, keep focused in the platform of Uttama Bhakti. Let's see, what else? And then Madan made the point about awakening compassion. This is mentioned early on in this chapter, of how Shudras, women, fallen people, you know, they deserve the mercy. They aren't, they don't have access to the katha of liberated souls, is how it's described. So they're worthy of mercy. And this is exactly what Prabhupada did. I mean, he got a heck of a lot of criticism for it in India, but that's what he did. He came to perhaps the most degraded situation in the universe and helped, out of compassion, help people become devotees. And his whole mood is expressed very succinctly by Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev in the ninth chapter of the seventh canto. Naivo duije para dharatiya vaitaranyas tvad virya gayana mahamita mangachita suche tato vimukachetasa indriyata mayasukaya param utahato vimudham. And here Prahlad saying to Nrisimhadev, oh, best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence, because I'm fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. In the Madhya 22, Prabhupada translates it, because I'm in so much ecstasy chanting your holy name, and I don't have anything. But again, they're strictly in the process. That's why there's no fear. That eliminates fear, the process of bhakti. But I'm simply concerned with love for those fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and for maintaining their family societies and countries. I'm simply concerned out of love for them. So that's essentially the compassion that Prabhupada expressed, which is brought up later in the first few verses in the chapter. And it's something that can prompt us when we see the hellish conditions in Kali Yuga. We hear these descriptions of how people just go down and down and down to hellish planets, to hellish bodies, and they're just suffering perpetually. The only thing that can free them from this is bhakti. That's the only thing that releases them from the modes. So even Vanashram or Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga, without some element of bhakti in it, it can't really elevate one in the modes. Okay, so another perhaps reason that this is being brought up in the first part of this chapter, it's kind of a prelude to what may be the most important verse in these four chapters, in this discussion between King Nimi and the Naviogendras. And that's the verse that Karna Bhajana speaks, predicting the advent of, anybody? That's right. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangashta Parshadam Jagnai Sankitana Prayer Yajantihi Sumedasa. So this is, you know, intelligent people, Sumedasa, they worship Lord Krishna, who's come as Lord Chaitanya, accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. So, kind of Lord Chaitanya, he's the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. And there's a big need for this mercy because of the degraded conditions in Kali Yuga. Prayena pa yasa sabya kala vashman yugejana manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya yupadruta. So in this Iron Age of Kali, men are short-lived, they're quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. That's it. You know, I mean, that's what's going on. So what's the remedy? Chant Hare Krishna. And that's what Lord Chaitanya has brought to us. And so we can just see, it's unbelievable, how rapidly Krishna consciousness is spreading in Russia and India, how it eventually will again spread very rapidly in America once we all get it together. It's powerful and it works. And all of us are living testimony to this. So this is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And this whole description in the first part of the chapter is the potential degradation that the jiva can go through. And it's just full tilt in Kali Yuga all over. You go anywhere and it's just completely degraded. Okay, so I'll stop here. And let me read the translation and then maybe there's some comments or questions. King Nimi further inquired, "My dear Yogendras, all of you are most perfect in knowledge of the science of the self. Therefore, kindly explain to me the destination of those who, for the most part, never worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who are unable to quench their material desires and are not in control of their own selves." Yes, Sukadam.
There's a few points I wanted to mention. One of them, even though I know so many devotees who are separated from the movement for some time or other, but so many of the devotees would say when they returned that they could never, ever forget about Krishna. So they may not be active like in a temple, but so many of them may still be worshiping, still chanting. I think it's important to note that, yeah, just because how powerful Krishna consciousness is. And then the idea of, so many people coming, they're atheists or agnostics. I can totally understand that because, before I was a devotee, you think of all the misery in the world, all the suffering. And then you think, well, God's in charge. Like, how is this, how is this happening? So for me, when I heard stories of, hell and brimstone, even as a young girl, I thought, well, I have no interest in going to heaven and being with God because he's cruel. He punishes people and, like that. So what's so attractive about Krishna consciousness is that Srila Prabhupada, he emphasized all the characteristics of God, his compassion, his love, his beauty, his fame, his wealth. And Prabhupada would say that all of our birth in the material world, not just our one birth, but all the births, the 8,400,000 species of life that we've been through many, many times, is basically like a second. So Yeah, I mean, there's a German word for sin. The German word for sin is asunder, which means separation from God. So that's what really sin is. And that's what material activity is. It takes us farther and farther away from God, you know, from Krishna consciousness.
Good point. During the centennial in 1996, the Centennial Committee published, because the centennial was observed by different petals of the lotus flower. And so one petal was uniting Prabhupada's family. Because after Prabhupada left, quite a few devotees went outside. And so there was one devotee, there was the first article in the first issue, there was two issues, first issue was an interview with a devotee that had traveled all over the world and met with over 500 devotees that had disassociated themselves from ISKCON, and most of them had stopped practicing. It was very interesting how there were, in all 500, there were common denominators, two of them. One is that each devotee expressed great love and respect for Srila Prabhupada. So that was there. Number two was that the interviewer understood that these devotees had somehow or other not been able to accommodate the aspect of our philosophy enunciated in 10.14.8. Which is the Mahavakyam for processing distress. Tateno kampam shukshamikshamano bunjane vatmakutam vipakam ridvag vapabir vidadan namaste jiveta yo muktipade sadayabhat. One who always seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions, understanding that karnabhata is a result of one's past misdeeds, goes on rendering service with body, mind, and words, offering obeisances from the core of his heart, that person becomes eligible to enter into pure devotional service. There's a lot of nuances to this tattva around processing distress or life's challenges come in Shastra and from our acharyas. Actually, these are, as we covered in the last chapter and was mentioned in the purport of this verse, that the distresses that a devotee undergoes are actually the way he puts his foot on these challenges and climbs a stairway. So there actually can be impetus for advancement. But as you noted, in the outside world, the Christianity, or I won't mention any names, I'm sorry, but any other traditions, they don't really have such a comprehensive philosophical understanding of how to process distress. Where is distress coming from? What's its purpose? How it's God sent? How it's actually a loving exchange with the Lord's giving? And it takes a certain level of spiritual, at least of vigyan, to be able to process distress in that way. So, as you've rightly said, and there are different references along these lines, can't think of them right off the top of my head, but devotees have if a devotee falls down from the path of devotional service, he doesn't become a regular karmi. He's still a devotee. And he's just going through some purification, maybe more directly under the agency of Mahamaya, to free himself of the vestiges of that enjoying spirit. So he's still under the plan of the Lord, and he will return. And we've seen this. Devotees sometimes are out for a long time and then come back in. They learned a lot of important lessons in doing that. Okay?
Yeah, can I tell one quick story?
Sure.
I love this story because it's about a sannyasi who fell down, left the movement, and got married. And he became very ill with cancer. And so he was passing away. You know, he was in his last moments, and his wife was with him, who wasn't a devotee, who knew nothing about really Krishna consciousness. And as he was passing away, he looked up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, you're here after so many years. And he left. So, I mean, to me, that's so significant that, you know, once you begin this path of Krishna consciousness, of course, we have to be careful. But the other part of it is that Prabhupada, Krishna, they never abandon you once you start this path of devotional service. And the woman was so clueless, you know, the wife, that she looked up Prabhupada and she found out who he was, and she went to a temple and then found that her, you know, husband had had this whole previous life. But how incredible that he was that removed in one sense, but Srila Prabhupada loved him so much that he apparently delivered him.
Wow. Yeah, that's some story. Sure. Any other points? But yes.
You're talking about mentioning Varnashram Dharma. It's very close to my heart. And I really appreciate what you said this morning. Thank you very much. I have an inclination to believe that there's really no such thing of Varnashram Dharma separate from worshipping Krishna, that anything else is simply not Varnashram Dharma. So when you made the clarification of Diva, Varnashram Dharma...
Diva. Yeah, that's where you got Krishna right in the center of all your activity.
That's such an intuitive thing for me. It makes perfect sense. Yeah. I actually didn't even know that there was a clarification. With my ignorance, forgive me. But I really feel that this is like a supportive container for bhakti. And that if these if this order isn't implemented, there's really no support for people to have a methodology to serve Krishna in accordance to their own natural qualities. Yeah. And so there's kind of like an issue with the regulations, for example, in our country, even for this temple, that inhibit the practicing of that divine dharma. And it's such a tragedy to me, because like you've mentioned, all the fallen souls who really need a true spiritual container in order to channel their natural qualities towards devotion, but are unable to find it in modern society. And I pray often that more and more living examples of Varnashram Dharma can be propagated all over the country, so that the fallen souls have an opportunity to utilize their natural qualities in the service of Krishna. Yeah.
Very good point. Oftentimes devotees come to devotional service because they're in distress. You know, it tends to motivate. It's like kind of the kick from behind. So it doesn't take much. One doesn't have to be clairvoyant to see what the future is, like in America and different countries in the Western world. What's up ahead? You know, it's just going to be more and more and more intense. Sinful activity becomes more prominent. Suffering becomes more intense. So Krishna has a plan. And, you know, we're at the beginning stage of our movement. Prabhupada really wanted this. There's these Varnashram discussions. They were in Mayapur. What was that, in 75 or 76? 75 or 76. And there was a whole series of fall downs of leading devotees. And then Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not such an easy thing, therefore Varnashram. And he really pushed that Varnashram because it really protects devotees. So your points are extremely valid, and it's good that you've put this deep within your heart. You can maybe take a leading role in implementation. It's important, you know. Okay. Yeah, no, it's true. It comes about through cooperation. That's how we can do amazing things, miraculous things, to develop to a cooperative mood. And this is what's required in this, because it's almost an impossible, given all the circumstances, but impossible is in a fool's dictionary. There's one example of how cooperation can work. In 1967, Srila Prabhupada sent Satrup Das Adhikari, his wife Jadarani, Evi Dasi, and Pradyumna to Boston to start the first Boston temple. There's a period of almost a year and a half, I believe, that no one joined. And the local hooligans would sometimes break the windows and attack the temple, the real small temple. So out of frustration, Satrup Das Adhikari, now Satrup Maharaj, wrote to Prabhupada and said, "What can we do, Srila Prabhupada, to get people to join?" And so his response was, "When you consciously try to cooperate amongst yourself, then Krishna will send so many devotees." And it's exactly what happened. Within a very short period of time, Giri Rai Swami joined so many prominent devotees, and they had to get a new temple within 6 months. And then 6 months later, they had to get even another, a bigger temple. It became the largest project with ISKCON. And then Prabhupada sent the ISKCON press up there. They were just in ecstasy because they were cooperating. And then they got the blessings of Krishna. So any difficult task, if there's a, well, we know the term from the material management realm, synergy. But within devotional service, it also works like that because Krishna is very pleased when devotees cooperate. And Prabhupada, one of his last instructions was, "You can show your love for me by how well you cooperate to keep this institution intact." Keeping it intact also will means establishing Varnashram, Daivi Varnashram. Okay, so we should end here. Thank you. I'll go to Prabhupada.